This is Wyman and Bob
on Seattle Sports Station, powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
It is time, ladies and gentlemen. It has been far too long since we've had a chance to speak with this man, and it just makes the day better when you can bring in a man of this stature, a man of this caliber. He's one of my all-time favorite Seahawks, really one of my all-time favorite people, Dave Wyman. You know how happy I am when we get a chance to speak to the one, the only, Cliff Avril, who is with us now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. How are you, buddy?
Oh, man. You know what? Whenever I hear your intros, you're always supposed to smile on my face, man. I am good, man. I appreciate it.
Well, Cliff, I'll tell you this, though. When Bob finds out that we're going to interview you, he has a picture of you on his fireplace mantle, and he lights a candle. Also, he also walks his dog Frank wearing only a Cliff Avril jersey, number 56. So
that's the one jersey that got sold. Okay, nice. I know where it went.
Oh, come on!
I can't hide from it. It's all true. Yeah. It's all true.
Yeah. Well, Cliff,
well, I appreciate it.
You are one of our favorites, and I wanted to start you off. One of the things I remember hearing—I don't remember if it was from you or KJ—but that the Avril families and the Wright family would get together and have game night. And I was just thinking, man, that does my heart good, because knowing that two of the best dudes ever to put on Seahawk jerseys were playing game night. What did you guys have? Was it Uno or something like that?
Oh, man, we play all types of stuff, and it gets so competitive. Yeah, whether it's Uno, whether it's heck, we might even play what is it, Jenga? We might play. I mean, it's all the kiddie games, but it gets so intense, especially if it's KJ and I. If we're the only ones left, it's going down. Like a lot of yelling, a lot of loud talking. Yeah, it's a great time.
I can just see the kids are like, oh, "Dad, wait, can we play?" No, I'm competing here. Yeah. I gotta beat KJ.
Who talks smack during Jenga? That's great.
No doubt about it. We're definitely yelling at the kids for almost breaking it. Yeah, it's a fun time.
Hey, speaking of KJ, he's been in the news a little bit lately. He made it clear on a podcast that he would love to return to Seattle, and it sounds like that would be his only place he'd want to play. And then Pete Carroll said, yeah, we've talked. And then we had a chance to speak with John Schneider the other day that said, yeah, you know, we've had discussions about things that would probably be off the field. So taking that a step further, what would you think? I mean, I think this organization benefits with KJ's presence on in any capacity, whether it's on the field, whether it's a coach, a advisor, what have you. What do you think? How would he fit?
I agree. I think whether it is a player being in the locker room, being able to show some of these young boys, you know, what it takes to be a veteran, you know, how to be a leader, what a championship defense looks like, you know, if he's able to suit up. But even in an advisor role or even coaching role, I think having someone like that in your locker room that just understands what it takes to win, understand what it looks like to be great, you know, collectively as a team, not just one individual. I think that'd be huge to have someone like that. And he's not far removed. I mean, a lot of these guys he's played with, you know, over the last year and a half or whatnot. So overall, though, I think having KJ in that locker room, having a few of us, honestly, in that locker room, just being able to help guide these guys, showing them what it looks like to be a pro, showing them what it looks like, how to break down film, and also, you know, what it looks like to just be able to win ball games, what it takes to win ball games would be huge.
Hey, for a guy like KJ, now, it was pretty simple for you, right, Cliff? I mean, you had a neck injury, and you probably were, like, looking at your family and things like that. And I remember Max Strong, you know, that was kind of the way he went out. I was one that all 30 teams had to slam the door in my face before, you know, I hung him up. But it was probably a fairly easy decision for you, right?
Yeah. My situation is a lot different than what KJ is going through. Yeah. And, you know, I say this all the time when we're having our conversations, it's like the NFL is really only two ways to lead the NFL. You know, it's either you get cut, which means all 32 teams slam the door on you, or you get hurt. It's rare that someone actually leaves on their own terms.
Yeah.
I say this all jokingly all the time. Like in my 10 years and all my teammates, I only know two guys that have done it. One was Calvin Johnson. The other one was Marshawn Lynch. And heck, Marshawn came back. You know what I mean? So, So it's one of those things that that's just how the league goes and how it usually happens. So my situation was more along those lines is I got hurt. Could I have came back and played? It would have been stupid to try to, and it was my family, my friends, you know, just looking at the situation. It was year 10 when this injury happened. It could have happened year one. We're talking about a whole different conversation, you know. So my decision was a little easier than someone that wants to continue to keep playing, but yet guys are, you know, the league is telling them, nah, we're going to probably pass on you.
You know, one thing I always wanted to ask you that I always forget, and that's back to the Super Bowl loss, and you got hurt. And I'm sure you've heard it from a million people. We hear it all the time. If Cliff Averill doesn't get hurt, we win that game.
Yeah.
I'm curious how you feel about hearing that, because on one hand, that's a huge compliment. It just tells you how much you meant and your impact and everything on that defense. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, probably frustrating going, man, I got hurt. I couldn't play. And we know how the game turned out. When you hear that kind of thing, how do you feel about that?
Well, it's an honor that someone, you know, people think that I would have played a big impact in that game, which I think I probably would have. I've never been missed so much in my life from the entire city, for not playing in the game. But overall, though, you know, I play both sides of the fence. One, like I said, it's cool that people feel that way about me. And the second, on the other hand, too, is like, dang. If I would have stayed in the game, maybe I have two rings now, you know? So it's one of those two. But I always look at it like this. Whenever I get that question, hey, I got one ring. Of course, I could have had two, but I could also have been 0-for as well. So I had one, messed up on another one, but I got one. Ultimately, I was one of those players that ended up leaving the league with a ring. So it's still a good space to be in.
Yeah, and especially you came from Detroit. How many years before that was when you came here were – they 0-16.
Hey, stop bringing up old stuff. We're having a good, pleasant conversation. We're having a great, pleasant conversation, and then you want to throw that out there.
I'm just providing contrast, Cliff. That's all. Hey, no, I was on a 2-14 season, brother. I know what that's like. So.
Yeah, but you won two games. I was 0-for 16 straight weeks of not winning one game.
Oh, man.
No, but... That happened my rookie year, actually. So it was my first year. I went 0-16, and then 5 years later, I'm in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, awesome.
And I think that really defies just continue to keep working hard, man. Head down, keep grinding. You just never know.
Hey, you mentioned when we were talking about KJ and his value in that locker room, you said, you know, having, you know, all of us in there, or some of us in there, and I assume that includes you. We know Cam has been around the team in different forms. I don't know if he's got a title or anything, but – would you want to coach? Would you want to be an advisor, or would you want to, you know, be working with the team in some capacity along with KJ, Cam, people? Because I think it'd be a huge value to the guys in that locker room. But is that something you'd want to do?
I would love to, for sure. I would love to be a part of the organization. And my whole thing is, honestly, on the coaching side, being on the field would be great. You know, I work with a lot of the young guys already anyways. I work with some of the D-linemen already anyways. But I think it's more along the lines of just having some veteran players that know what it looks like to be a pro. You know, I think sometimes coaches, and I'm not putting this on the Seahawks, I'm just saying in general for the NFL, sometimes, you know, we look at the young player, he's cheaper, all these different things, but if he doesn't have a leader to help him understand what he's getting himself into, his career ends up being shorter than it needs to be, you know? So having some leadership, guys that have been in the locker room, guys that have been on in the trenches, that have seen the same play that they're seeing, I think there's just a different level of respect that will come with that. And to have guys in the locker room to be able to show these guys, I think we'll just be able to take this team to another level, you know, from a youth standpoint, being able to allow them to grow a little quicker.
Hey, Cliff, you run SAC 360, just a pass rush academy or program that you own. And tell us about that. Have you been working with who have you been working with? Have you started that up yet?
Yes. So I have been working with a few guys. But, yeah, SAC 360, I started this right after I retired, actually. I was doing it, you know, just helping guys out. A lot of the younger guys, you know, Jaren Reed, Cassius Marsh, Quentin Jefferson, all those guys were, hey, man, you know, we still want to work with you, because when I played, again, this is part of the veteran piece of it. When we played, you know, we would take 2 weeks out of the off season and fly everybody to Hawaii. We all the entire D line would train together. Mm. So that was kind of something they were used to, and they wanted to keep that going. So when those guys asked me to come out, I realized how much I actually liked coaching. Or I don't even say coaching, how much I like teaching some of the things that I've learned through the years. You know, it only made sense. So I'm still doing it. I've been working with a few of the guys. You know, I'm supposed to be getting with DT here soon. I'm supposed to be getting with a few of the younger guys as well to start training with them. Most of it will happen in July right before camp. But, you know, I'm looking forward to hopefully being able to give some of these guys some of the stuff that I've learned over the years.
Now, how does that work? Do those guys reach out to you? Because you got a couple of guys, Boye Mafe and Tyreek Smith, who, mm-hmm. by the way, what a great kid. We talked to him. I got a chance to meet him out at the rookie camp and just a really mm-hmm. good quality guy. But do those guys, they reach out to you or – vice versa? How do you guys sort of get together, get connected?
So Smith already reached out to me. Actually, he reached out to me, I want to say, like 2 days after he got drafted, actually.
Oh, good.
He reached out to me.
He's a smart guy.
He really is. Because he played, obviously, at Ohio State, but he played with my guy JT, who's from out here, who I've been training, I don't know, for 3-4 years now. And I've been in contact with him, and he wants to start coming out and training with me at 360 with some of the other guys. And then it usually comes from, honestly, Clint Hurt. Clint Hurt will send him my way. Oh. Like, hey, you guys need to go holler at Cliff, you know, just to learn a few different things or whatnot and you know, get it going. So that's usually how the younger players get in contact with me, is through Clint Hurt.
You know, Dave and I were talking about the defense. I felt like the entire season last year, basically asking questions. What is going on? What are they doing? I don't understand what they're doing out there. Just dropping linemen into coverage and certain guys not playing. And one of the guys we talked about was your guy, Alton Robinson, who in his rookie year looked really promising, had some really, you know, splash moments, if you will, out there. And then last year it was hard to figure out how they were using him, as little as they used him. He didn't have the number. He didn't take that step we all thought he would. What did you make of his season and just sort of how the defense was run last year?
Well, he didn't play as much as I thought he would have going into the season, which was kind of surprising because, you know, when you have a young player like himself, you know, you want to keep building his confidence up too by getting playing time and allowing him to go out there and make some plays. So that was kind of unfortunate to see, but I also think, you know, the defense was a little different, last year. You know, you're talking about seeing different guys dropping that you're not used to seeing and different things like that. I think that was probably, due to the system and how the scheme was ran last year. You know, I definitely didn't like seeing Carlos Dunlap dropping into the flats. No. I like seeing Carlos getting after quarterbacks, you know what I mean? But that was the defense that they felt like they needed to run for the collective, you know, allowing some other guys to be able to make plays and you know, try to scale that way. I think they go back to their original way of playing ball, though, getting your four guys that pin their ears back and allowing them to get after the quarterback. I don't see too many of those guys dropping back into coverage this year. I think what I do know is, when you have a D-line coach as a defensive coordinator, the D-line typically gets, you know, the right calls to put them in the right position to go out and win. I mean, heck, when we had, you know, Dan Quinn, that was the case. You know, hey, you know, third downs, I don't want to hear nothing about none of my pass rushers going backwards. They're all going after quarterbacks, right? So they understand the value. And then I think Clint Hurt will bring that same aspect to that defense as well.
The one thing we've heard repeatedly with the new, you know, defensive coordinator and Clint Hurt and what they're going to do, they're saying it's a 4-3 with the 3-4 3-4 principles. And we're trying to figure out what exactly, when you hear that, what does that mean to you?
Honestly, what we ran in our base defense back in the day was essentially that same type of lingo. Is a 4-3 with a 3-4 type of philosophy. I mean, the Leo position, for example, which is the position I played, you know, I can stand up or I can be in a 3-point stance and it will look just like a 3-4 scheme. You know, the sandbacker standing up on the line of scrimmage, I can stand up on the line of scrimmage and it looks just like a 3-4. But nine times out of ten, Cliff is going forward. The Sam is dropping back in the coverage, which is very similar to a 3-4 scheme. So I think that is what Coach Hurd is saying is will probably look like a 3-4 scheme, but it'll be mostly, you know, your guys lined up like a 4-3, meaning, you know, you'll have a shade, the nose guard, Puna Ford, will probably be shaded on the center. You'll have a 3 technique, whoever that 3 technique might be. So it'll be very similar to a 3-4 with a lot of 4-3 looks, but it just gives you a lot of wiggle room to do a lot of stuff up front.
Yeah, Cliff, and when I'm asked about that, I played in both, you know, and my first couple years it was 3-4 and I lined up over the guard, and then it was a 4-3, I lined up over the center, and you're always rushing 4, right? So I mean, do you think people are probably overcomplicating that a little bit? They're taking that, whatever he's saying there, they run 3-4 principles and kind of running with it and thinking that it's going to be something totally different.
I think people are taking it too far. Again, the 2013, 2014, 15, exact same concept. It was like a 3-4 look, but it was more like 4-3, you know, and it gives you a variety of looks that you can get, right? You look at the guys that they drafted, you know, whether you're talking about Boy or even Smith, both of these guys can do both, right? Mm-hmm. So it gives you flexibility to be able to do both. When I say both, that means dropping back into coverage or pass rushing. You know, it gives you that ability to be able to do both. And now you can give them so many different looks. Wherever this guy's standing up, you don't know what you're going to get out of him. So now you got to look at somebody else to see what coverage and whatever else is going on in the defense. It just gives you flexibility to be able to do a lot of things.
The one thing we know is that pass rushers universally hate dropping into coverage.
1,000%. Yeah. 1,000%.
And we hated seeing it.
Well, I remember even Bruce Irvin, like, he got 2 pick sixes, I think it was in 2014. He's like, I don't care about those. You know, I just want the sacks.
No. Listen here. When you're talking to the D-lineman, you're asking about any stat. If they're a true pass rusher, the only stat they care about is going to always be a sack. Yep. Sack, fumble. Would you take an interception over a sack? Heck no. I don't get paid for interceptions. I get paid for sacks. I like getting at the quarterback.
Hey, so looking at this team, I mean, everybody seems happy with the draft. They address some needs, and hopefully these guys pan out. We'll all find out at the same time. But the biggest question mark, Cliff, still sits around the most important position on the team, and that's the quarterback. We don't know if it's Geno. We don't know if it's Drew Locke or Jacob Eason or, you know, at this point, those are the guys you're dealing with. So how do you view this team going into the season? Does it sound like it'll be, if it's one of those guys, it'll be a stripped down offense? There's going to be a lot of, it's not chucking the ball down the field like you did with Russell. It'll be a safer, more run heavy offense, or how do you see it?
I see it. This is going to be one of the first times that quarterbacks actually have to compete in camp. So that's going to be good. And competition always brings the best out of any and everybody. But overall, though, from a scheme perspective, you know, whoever you end up going with, I think it'll be a different type of offense regardless, right? If you go with Jacob Eason or even Locke, I think it'll be a completely different offense from, say, Geno. You know what I mean? It just depends on who shows out in camp, and then you'll see the type of offense that you want to see. I also think that the running game is going to be important regardless of what quarterback that we have behind that center, right? We have to establish that running game regardless. And then everything else will play off of the type of quarterback that we have. And then our defense just has to be elite. As the offense figures out how they're going to be or what they're going to be, that defense has to come out and play some really good ball early and often to allow that offense to figure out what they're going to do.
Hey, Cliff, before we let you go, by the way, we could talk to you for an hour, but I know you got things to do, but hey, tell us about the Cliff Avril Family Foundation. Anything going on? Any upcoming events or anything?
Yes. No, and I appreciate that. No, yes. So, of course, the Cliff Avril Family Foundation, we got a bunch of events coming up, but most importantly, we have Champions of Change coming up, right? And that's Michael Bennett, Doug Baldwin, and myself. We all partnered up together and created an organization to be able to raise funds and awareness for a few different organizations here in the city. Mine is going to be Odessa Brown Clinic, and that's where all the funds are going to go for that. But the biggest piece of it is we're hosting a celebrity, I hate saying celebrity, but a celebrity basketball game, a charity celebrity basketball game on June 26th. We have Climate Pledge Arena. We got it for the day, and it's going to be a great time. We're trying to fill it up. It's all about bringing families together to get them basketball, right? We got Marshawn Lynch and Gary Payton both coaching the teams. It's going to be fun. We got Richard Sherman. We got, obviously, I just said Doug. We got Nate Robinson, Isaiah Thomas. I mean, Jamal Carr. The list is long as far as for all the athletes that are going to be in the building, that are going to be playing, that are going to be in the building. Please go get tickets to check that game out. And go. You can see everything at championsofchange.org. It's going to be a great time, and it's all for a great cause.
Is that info on your website as well, CliffAverillFamilyFoundation.org?
Yes, you should be able to see everything on my foundation page, but to see the full roster and everything else, go to championsofchange.org, and you'll be able to see all the stuff that we plan on doing for that weekend.
Champion, awesome. Championsofchange.org is the website to get all the information on that celebrity basketball game. It'll be coming up June 26th at Climate Pledge Arena. Cliff, you know, it's always a pleasure, always an honor to speak with you. And you have to make us a promise, because I get a feeling one day you're going to be on the Seahawks coaching staff in some capacity. You still need to.
I don't know about that. I don't know about that. So your promise will stand strong, whatever that promise is.
Well, you should be on. I'm just going to say that right now. And then when that day comes, you still have to come on the show with us. You still got to come on and talk to us.
I got you. All right. I will never let you. I will quit. I will quit if they tell me I can't come on your show. You hear me?
Love it. We appreciate it, Cliff. Thanks so much, man.
Thanks, Cliff.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
There he is. The great Cliff Averill. Always appreciate him. And if you missed any of that conversation, it will be available for you on the podcast page after the show at seattlesports.com. Just click the podcast tab and click on our picture. It's right there. And remember, click subscribe. That's the easiest way to never have to think about it again. Coming up, the Mariners are going to be without a few more players pretty soon here. Jerry DePoto explains their roster situation. Coming up next, it's Wyman and Bob. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app.
This is Seattle Sports Station.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob, brought to you by Angel of the Winds Casino Resort.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Our thanks to Cliff Averill, who joined us in the previous segment, in case you just tuned in. You can find that conversation on the podcast page after the show, seattlesports.com. Just click the podcast tab, scroll down to our picture, and click on that. Would you say Cliff Averill is a great guy or a super great guy?
Super duper great, Bob.
He's super necessary on the
super
show.
Super duper. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, we all know about your love for Cliff Averill.
Yeah.
And we all love Cliff, but Bob, probably a little extra.
I don't think I'm alone in that. Right?
No. Oh, everybody loves Cliff, of course. But anyway, so I was trying to make, you know, because you were kind of giving me a hard time about Goldsmith and how, you know, he was my hero and all this stuff. So
did that make you uncomfortable?
A little bit. Yeah. Yeah, because Goldie's looking at me like, going, okay, who's this guy, you know? But, so I solicited our buddy Adam Ray, and I asked him, you know, can you try to come up with some jokes about Bob and his love for Cliff and, you know, make him uncomfortable? And he misunderstood the assignment. So Adam sends me instead, he thought I wanted to make fun of Cliff, I guess. So he said, ask Cliff who he'd rather be stuck in the back of an Uber with at 2 a.m. Bob Stelton, Mike Salk, a guy who looks like Bob but sounds like Brock Huert. Or ask him, if football didn't work out and you became an exotic dancer, what would your stage name be? I'm not going to ask Cliff that. I think the best one here is, would you rather be kicked in the junk by John Ryan or have your feet tickled by John Schneider?
His references are just so random, they make me laugh. Oh, he's hilarious. And we need to congratulate Adam, because his show that he does with The Rock, The Young Rock on NBC, has been picked up for season 3.
Yeah.
So it's a smashing success, obviously due in large part to Adam's presence on the show, I would say.
I still have not met Adam face-to-face in person.
You will.
But we're going to try to get him out to a game out at Edgar's.
Yeah, come sit on set with us at Edgar's. And I don't think Thumb's looking forward to that, because I think he feels like he's just going to be a target for 4 hours. But
yeah,
see, he's pretending he can't hear us right now.
Yeah, he's ducking down below the monitor.
I'm not I don't understand the excitement or hype. I mean, it's just, it'll be a thing. I'm
not
scared of anything.
Are you setting them up? Or are you just teeing them up? Is that what's going on there?
Does he need any extra motivation? I mean, if he's a good comedian, he wouldn't need the motivation.
Oh, my goodness. Look at that. Okay.
We got more pressing things to attend to right
now. Lefko thinks he's just so
shovel
funny right now.
Meet the hole. You're just digging and digging. Okay. All right. Well, we'll love to get him out there. We love it. So we appreciate his attempt to give you some jokes directed at me. Misunderstood the assignment. That's hilarious. Meanwhile, the Mariners are going to be without a few players, as we said, coming up. Jerry DePoto talking about when they head to take on Toronto. Canada has a vaccine mandate that's in place, which will preclude some players that may not have been vaccinated to this point from playing out there. And here's what he had to say about that.
Yeah, we'll have a few. And, you know, that's something that we will and have been working on managing our way through. And 29 other clubs, or I guess whoever, there might be some National League teams that aren't going to Toronto this summer, but we'll have to adapt just like other teams. And everybody's going to have to deal with the same rules, and we'll make it work.
It's an interesting predicament, because I can see there's going to be a certain segment of the fan base that's going to be mad at those guys, especially if, and I don't know who they are. I don't think any of that's been made public. I know people speculate about different players, but in terms of officially knowing who has or has not been vaccinated, I actually have no idea on this team.
Well, and also, what was the threshold percentage-wise that it had to be? Was it 85%, I want to say?
I don't recall what it was, to be honest.
So, but I guess, you know, as far as that goes, if you get to that amount and the few players that are not vaccinated, are good to go, but Canada's different.
Those are their rules. You're playing in their country, so those are the rules in place, and that's how it goes. There's going to be some anger from fans, especially if they're key players, if they're crucial players, if it's, you know, Ty, and again, just throwing out names. I don't know who has or has not, but if it were Ty France and J.P. Crawford and Marco and Robbie, or, you know what I mean, if it's like just all these guys you're counting on and none of them are vaccinated, you're going, well, you know, what kind of a chance do you have at that point in that series? So I could see, obviously, fans being very frustrated with that. And maybe, you know, you never know. Maybe some of the guys in that clubhouse, I don't know how that goes. I don't know what those conversations are like in there when it comes to that topic. And if, you know, maybe there are some players that weren't excited about doing it, but said, hey, I'm going to do it because, you know, we're all on the same team here. So I'm going to do that, where somebody else just said, no, I'm not going to. Is there going to be any blowback from that? It's just it's a weird dynamic that you never had to really face or deal with before. So,
well, and this is their only trip into Toronto,
I believe. So,
but yeah. What if you come up against them in the playoffs? If they get to the playoffs, I mean, that's going to really be a predicament there. So, you know, and I don't know, would MLB consider moving some games to Buffalo? Because if it's a really, you know, there are some mainline, you know, high profile players that didn't want to do it, and now all of a sudden you're getting in the playoffs if Toronto makes the playoffs. That's kind of tricky there. But I know Canada's very serious about it. So, but you know, again, this is what, a three game
series. And depending on how things go with New York, maybe it makes it look worse. I mean, if things don't go well in the New York series, and then you're headed into Canada, and all of a sudden you're struggling anyway, oh, and we're going to remove this guy, and this, whoever they are, however many players they are, that makes it feel worse.
Yeah. Well, and I'm assuming because of, there are some free agent guys, I mean, that probably went into their decision, you know, because Robbie Ray came from Toronto, right? But they played all their games in Buffalo. So I think that, did they play every single game there, Mike?
They went back towards the end of the year. They weren't not allowed back until like the end of June or July last year.
Oh.
But yeah, they played the second half of the season there.
Okay. So yeah, I mean, I'm sure that was all in the planning and everything, but boy, it's tough. I mean, this is not the time when Jerry needs to have this kind of thing going on.
No, you don't have that slack in terms of your roster. So again, not knowing, and one guy you would hope would be coming up, not probably obviously in time for this series, but Jerry was asked about the latest with Kyle Lewis. Here's what he had to say.
As has often been the case with Kyle, kind of a bit mercurial, you know, lots of highlights. He's swinging the bat very, very well. And, you know, unfortunately, it hasn't been as easy for him to bounce back after a day of playing defense. But We're making progress. He should be out there again tonight and hopefully for the next three. And then we'll reassess where we are as we get through the weekend with the Mets. He will not be with us to begin our series in New York. But I think once we move past that, if all goes well, he is in the discussion for one of the solutions that can help us.
All right. So not New York. Maybe Toronto sounds like it's a bit optimistic if he's having a hard time bouncing back from a night of playing defense. So we'll see. I mean, still no real answers there. It sounds like everybody's finding out at the same time, right? We just have to run him out there, see how he responds the next day.
Yeah, just going to have to manage him a little bit. And, maybe you can do that DHing him, as he said. So,
all right. Coming up, we might have a price range for what it will cost for the Seahawks to sign DK Metcalf. We'll hear about that when we sweep the dial. It's Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports Station on 710 and seattlesports.com.
Scanning the airwaves for the most interesting and entertaining stories of the day. Sweeping the dial. Every afternoon at 4:45 with Wyman and Bob.
Well, the NFL schedule will be released in minutes. 5 o'clock, the official schedule will come out. We do know the Seahawks Week 1 game. It was already announced. They're hosting the Broncos.
We know every game.
We do know every game. We do.
We do.
You have the schedule in your hands.
We are holding the schedules. You can't see them. It's just a piece of paper that you see right there. Don't worry.
There's a black mark that gets you there.
Yeah, you can't see anything. Dave and I are privy. We're connected.
And Dave's
I can't be trusted. Yeah,
it.
Dave's crumpling his up because he's going to
I can't be trusted.
So you, as very important people, have the full schedule.
Yes, we do.
We'll announce it soon. But we do know they're playing the Broncos Week 1. And Denver reporters yesterday caught up with John Elway, who was at some golf function. They asked him about Russell Wilson. He described the impact that Russ has had on the Broncos so far.
I don't know. There's been words of wisdom, but I think that, we're excited that he's in town. There's no question. I think he's the kind of the piece that we needed. We got a good football team around him, and I think that George did a tremendous job of putting that deal together and getting him up here. So I know it's great to see the fan base energized again, and we got a chance to compete in that AFC West, which obviously is going to be tough. But again, like anything, we got to stay healthy, and we've had a tough time doing that the last several years. And so if we can stay healthy. Russell's been there. He's won Super Bowls. He knows what it takes. And, the leadership that he's providing is tremendous.
Yeah, listen, if I'm in Denver and I'm a Broncos fan, how could you not be excited about this? You haven't had a quarterback since Peyton Manning.
I know. It's been few and far between.
You had Brock Osweiler. You had Drew Locke. You had Teddy Bridgewater. You've tried all these different things that just have not worked out.
Was Flacco there?
Yeah.
Jake Plummer. I mean, if you go back to Elway...
Well, Plummer was before...
Yeah, but I'm saying if you go from Elway, it was a total...
Oh, yeah, Brian Greasy was there, I think, wasn't he?
Mess.
Didn't he end up there for a bit? Yeah, obviously,
absolutely.
Tebow was there with the first-round pick.
And so you go all that time after having, maybe the greatest. I mean, John Elway is like... He is Mr. Denver.
Yeah.
So, and then, you get Peyton Manning, as you mentioned, and then it's been a struggle since, so... Now you go to Russell Wilson, and I mean, it's been a long wait for them, but yeah, I mean, this is a team that's fairly well put together, and now they just needed a quarterback.
Sweeping the dial.
Well, Mike Garafalo on NFL Network was breaking down what the Seahawks offer kind of needs to be in order to get DK Metcalf signed to an extension.
I made a point of saying AJ Brown got $25 million per year, and if I'm DK Metcalf, I'm saying I've got to be north of that because my numbers are better than AJ Brown's. I was named a second team All-Pro. AJ Brown wasn't. But since we've gotten a look at that deal, it's not quite $25 million. In real money, it's kind of, if you look at the structure over the first couple of years, like 23, I believe, Ian, is the number we came out at. So if DK Metcalf gets to a real 25, like he's going to earn 25 per year over the first couple of years, now I think you're in the ballpark.
I'm getting to where the sticker shock is starting to wear off a bit, Dave. And 25, I'm looking at it going, yeah, okay. Okay. I mean, it still is, you just think of any position outside of quarterback, you're going $25 million a year. But it is what's going on in the league. I mean, you can complain about it or understand you've got somebody who's worthy of it, somebody who's going to warrant that much money because of how good they are at that particular spot.
Well, and these receivers, I mean, they have big egos, and so they're going to want, you know, the bigger number. But I think DK's smarter than that, because what the Seahawks can do is make it up in upfront money,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, do something so that it's a better deal for him. So I don't think he's going to sit there and turn down something because it's not, you know, exactly what everybody else got, right? So he's smart enough, and I think the Seahawks typically are pretty creative. They got a great cap guy out there, and so they're very good at, nobody really knows who he is, but he does
and
a
he
great
likes it
job
that way.
Yeah, and he likes it that way, but they do a great job of you know, making it, sweetening the pot a little bit, even though the appearance, which I don't think DK needs that appearance, that he'll get a good deal.
Sweeping the dial.
Well, we were a little disappointed when the Kraken didn't get the number 3 pick. They got the number 4 pick, one below what they should have got. But never fear, John Morosi has plenty of names who will be available at number 4.
At the end of the day, this is a draft where, to be fair, and I love Shane Wright, the difference between Shane Wright likely at 1 and a Cooley at Logan Cooley at 2 or Slepkovsky at 3, however the order is, maybe it's 1, 2, 3 in a different order. But you're going to get a great player at 4. There are a lot of really, really talented players. It's maybe a more of a conversation as to who that player is going to be. Joakim Kemell had a great U18. He's from Finland. He's a name to watch. Cutter Goche is a name to watch. It's interesting, Morgan Geeky's younger brother, Connor, is probably a top 7 or 8 pick as well. It's sort of maybe pay some attention there. Matthew Savoy as well. So there are some good names there.
You know, personally, I like Cutter Goche.
Yeah, yeah. It's just, he could have been making up names, and we just totally punking us. We'd be going, huh, cool, all right. Well, and Josh McGeggy, obviously, is somebody people are really excited about.
Well, I was able to type in Shane Wright.
Yeah.
Yes, that's a hockey player. And then and then Cutter Goche is also a hockey player.
How do you spell
player.
That?
G-O-C-H-E.
Okay.
So, I mean, it's just amazing. Like you were saying during a break, he has a kid or two, a couple kids. JP
he's
does.
Married. He's got kids. He works for MLB Network, NHL.
Now NBC Sports also.
NBC Sports. Yeah. How does he have time to follow all of these, you know, this kid from Finland, this kid in junior hockey, this kid in college. He's just up to speed on everything in the world of baseball and hockey to an extent most aren't.
JP is amazing. He really is. And every time you see him, big smile on his face. I see him on the NFL Network.
He's the best.
the other day when the guy, who was it? Was
MLB
it
Nero? Network.
Yeah, what did I say?
NFL Network.
Yeah, MLB Network.
Don't give him more
Maybe
jobs.
He's on NFL Network too. I don't know. But it looked like he was being held hostage. And they're like, blink twice if you're being, yeah. if you're captive.
And then he talked, I love it here. This is a great hotel. Yeah. Thank everybody here. So funny. He's such a good dude. All right. Coming up, the Seahawks schedule is about to be officially released. Dave and I have a copy of it in our hands right now, and we are going to break it all down. Coming up next, it's Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app.